Good morning, good day, and good evening. I'm, as always, your host, Brody Robertson. And today, we have a returning guest who now no longer has a distro, doing an install script instead. Welcome back to the show. Introduce yourself for anyone who doesn't know you.
Well, I am known by many names, the man with many names, Tech Zero, Dark Zero, Steve, for the simple people. I'd rather go by Steve. Because the others are just fluff. And yes, as you mentioned, the distro is gone. Everything has a shelf life, basically. And my distro had a 3-year run with 2 years just for me, so 5 years total. It was a good run, but it was time to put it on the shelf and put my expertise where it counts, where it matters, by contributing upstream to Arch. Whenever I can. So now I am in contact with higher-ups at Arch from time to time, and I help maintain packages, and I do my script in my spare time. I put all the knowledge I gathered while maintaining Zero Linux into a small little toolkit that people can run post-install, which helps them get up and running real quick, because most people want to be productive quickly. They don't want to waste time setting up their system. So I thought, okay, I had this GUI welcome tool in Zero Linux. Why not create something more transparent, more akin to the way Arch likes to do things via the terminal? Because Arch is mostly terminal-centric. So I was like, yeah, okay. Let me see what I can do. So I ported most of my welcome tool into a CLI toolkit with the help of a person called Oglo. The front, he just helped me do the main menu and the front. It's written in Rust, because why not? But the rest of it is just bash script that I gathered. And as I was working on it, past 2-3 days, I created something a little bit special. You know how you can use Arch install to install Arch now? Well, the developers now allow you to skip the profile section. You can skip it and just, it will default to the minimal profile, basically, if you skip it. So what my script does, I'm working on it still, basically you skip the profile and the additional packages sections. You wait for it to install the basic packages. Then when it asks you to cheroot, you say yes. And then you paste the curl command. And we're going to talk about the curl command, because I know how you don't like people copying and pasting curl commands in terminal. But before we get there, they just paste the curl command I created. It runs, it executes a script which will install KDE Plasma, NVIDIA drivers, enable the modules, enable SDDM, enable all, install and enable all necessary Bluetooth, cups, and all the necessary stuff. And then once it's done, you just reboot and you have a functional system. All you have to do is use my toolkit to install any extra, either from the AUR or Arch repositories or FlatHub, wherever. And with this script, I fixed a lot of things that were wrong with Arch install, because I got in the thing that got me into creating my script was the fact that the way Arch install does profiles is kind of incomplete. I'm not gonna blame them or say they're doing it wrong. They're not. They're doing it the way they see fit. Each person does things the way they like, but it didn't fit into my vision. So I was like, they're not installing the complete Plasma. They're missing Spectacle. They're missing Dolphin add-ons. They're missing this. They're missing that. And I don't like installing meta packages, basically. So I created that KDE profile, my own custom KDE profile that installed a more complete Plasma package. And yeah, it went from there. So I was thinking to myself, why not create multiple profiles? One for XFCE, one for Hyperlan, one for whatever. So yeah, I'm working on that in my past time. So I'm trying to talk to Trox from Arch Install. They are adamant to stick to the way they do things. So yeah, that's why we developers contribute upstream. We contribute. We put scripts out there for people to use. But I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why? You do say it the correct way, but sometimes it comes off as a little bit scary. Why not run curl commands in terminal?
Okay, so the problem isn't running curl commands in the terminal. The problem, okay, so it boils down to one simple issue. Obviously, there is a separate thing where if someone is trying to do something malicious, obviously, you know, it's a problem. But let's assume that the script is running, like, it's a well-made script that is trying to do something good. The issue that can happen is if a download breaks in the middle of downloading that script, you can be put in a position where you're executing a half-downloaded script. If that happens and you might have, like, let's say you have a malformed RM command, for example, and it ends up deleting something that shouldn't be deleted, that is the main issue. The likelihood of this happening is fairly low. It would need to stop at a very, very specific point, but it's one of those additional risks that I just don't think is... I don't really think makes any sense to do, when it could just be broken down into separate commands and then that risk completely eliminated.
That is very true, but scripts are so small these days, it's impossible for them to break mid-download unless somebody wrote a script that is a few hundred megabytes. Then I do agree with
you. It's difficult, but it's one of those things where it's very unlikely that it would happen, but on the off chance that maybe, I don't know, there's some, like, the server itself has a slow connection, or the server's being hit really hard and downloads are much slower than they should be, or your connection is having issues, or any other number of things that can cause the download to slow down and then potentially break at a dangerous point. That's the main reason that, like, I don't think it should be done. There's the whole separate thing again, if the developer is malicious. But if the developer is malicious, you lost already trying to download the script. That's a whole separate thing.
Yeah, and because of your countless times mentioning that that issue, I added a link to my website. It's called Inspect Code. Mm-hmm. It's just a little thing up top of the website on zerolinux.xyz. It says Inspect Code. Mm-hmm. They click that link and it will take them straight to the script. And they can read the script and study it, see what it does. And I added a nice little quote that I sent you as a DM that ChatGPT generated.
Oh, that one, yeah. Just,
why did the Arch Linux user adopt KDE Plasma? Because they wanted their desktop environment to crash in style.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm having a look at the script now, and there's nothing here that could be dangerous, really. There's things where it's slightly inconvenient, like you'll end up... The worst that could happen here is you run the script and the script breaks halfway through it. That seems to be, like, the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
So, like, you...
Yeah,
like,
it will just not either add the repository and you end up with the toolkit not being installed and stuff like that, but nothing too malicious. So...
You could possibly... Maybe the said command could break and cause something bad to happen. That's probably the worst thing.
It edits the pacman.conf, yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst thing that I'm seeing. But even then, I'm struggling to think of a way that a said command could break that would cause damage, because it would just error out.
Nothing would cause damage. That's why when I created the script, I had your voice in my head saying, don't run curl commands, it might break. Mm-hmm. Your voice is very powerful, my friend.
I don't think so. I just sit in my
room. Some of the things you say do stick in my head, because your videos are super informational and they don't beat around the bush. They're straight to the subject and they do help. All the information you mention in your videos stays with me, because me as a up-and-coming developer, because we all started small, and by small, I started with Bash, and I'm sticking to Bash until I learn other things. I'm moving to Python, because Arch install is in Python.
Right.
So I need to learn that. But all the information you put in your videos, it stays with me. It helps me while I'm working. And I do go back to some of your videos, especially the one you did with David Edmondson about KDE, because, hey, I am one of the, if not the biggest KDE shill around. And I do talk to Nico. I do talk to some people up at KDE. I do report upstream. Sometimes I don't get a response. I'm patient. Sure. I learned patience. While using Linux, I learned something I never thought I would ever learn, patience. Because I do understand they got millions of other bug reports to go through.
Right, right.
Mine is not the most important one, especially that it's related to Network Manager. But other than that, I do contribute upstream. I talk to people on GitHub. I'm using the time I gained by no longer maintaining a distro to report bugs upstream.
Sure.
I no longer use AUR to report bugs. I just go straight to source. Like my Rice, for example, the infamous Zero Linux Rice is still there. It's part of my toolkit, but instead of installing the themes from the AUR, which shouldn't be done ever, regarding the issue that person had with a theme that deleted their home directory. I don't go to Pling. I don't go to store.kde.org. I just grab everything from source, even the widgets. So that was something that I would add to your video. So if you want to get widgets, Plasma widgets, if you want to get Plasma themes, global themes, whatever, be safe. Grab them from source, and make sure you're grabbing the right version for the version of the desktop environment you're using. Because I had a person report issues. He had a lot of Qt 5 apps on their Plasma 6 system. They installed the theme from store.kde.org, but it was a Plasma 6 theme, so his Qt 5 applications were not being themed. So be careful, people. Don't just make sure you are using the right versions of every application and the themes before you apply anything from KDE Plasma Store, because the Plasma Store is a wild, wild west, kind of like the AUR.
Yeah, I think the difference with the two of them, though, is people are under the assumption that things on the AUR could be a problem, where they weren't under that assumption with the KDE store, and especially with global themes. Like, there are a lot of people in my comment section who are like, it's a theme, how does it have code running? It's a theme, code running, that seems like a bug. Where internally, like, that's the way it was designed to work, and it's always been known to work like that if you're a developer on the project, but they'd never communicated that properly, and users were under this complete false assumption of what a global theme was actually capable of, and the way that global themes actually worked.
Yeah, and there's the fact that, I don't know if David Edmondson mentioned it, I watched it a week ago, but the fact that they moved away from themes having a metadata.desktop to metadata.json.
I don't think he mentioned that, no.
Now they use JSON files instead of desktop files. That's why global themes have to update their code, and the Plasma developers did push out a guide on how to port their Plasma 5 code to Plasma 6 months and months before, but I guess nobody got the memo. Very few people got the memo. So, for example, the lay-in theme that the Zero Linux Rice uses, there's someone on GitHub who mentioned how to, another theme developer basically just included a guide on how to convert the .desktop to .json. So I had to do it myself, fork the theme, do the necessary to convert the desktop to JSON, and then grab from there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of themes need to update. Plasmoids use a lot of JavaScript and JSON and stuff like that. So to add to what you said, Plasmoids and global themes have code.
Mm-hmm. Well, Plasmoids especially.
They're not just...
Like, anyone who thought that Plasmoid didn't, yeah, that, like...
Yeah.
But, like, obviously global themes, because global themes, they're not... Well, global themes are more like a meta package. That's what they really are. Because they include KDE theme, Plasma themes, they include icon themes, they also include, like, SDDM themes, which are... That's a whole other problem. They also include some Plasmoids, depending on the theme itself, and maybe KWin scripts, depending on the theme itself, and it's very, like... It's very much not a theme. It is a meta pa- Maybe that's a better name, like...
It's a meta package, basically.
Yeah, Plasma meta something or other. Maybe that works. I don't know.
Speaking of SDDM, you brought a very sensitive subject regarding SDDM, because since I have a testing VM, I test everything in a VM before I apply to my main system, but there were a few SDDM themes that caused chaos. Not because they were incompatible with Plasma 6, because I made sure I was installing Plasma 6 versions.
Mm.
But what that broke was, you know how you have the quiet flag you set in grub so you don't get the verbose code every time you reboot?
Yeah.
Well, one of the SDDM themes was not respecting that quiet flag. I was getting a lot of verbose output every time I rebooted, shut down, or whatever, and it would hang. It would hang on SDDM something, and I was able to access the root partition without root.
Okay.
I mean, it was like, it would show, it would crash at the end, and it would log you in as root for whatever reason. Maybe to troubleshoot, maybe to whatever. Maybe that was a malicious code that I caught. I don't know. It just, boom, it landed me in root, and I could delete my root files and whatever. And I realized that this included Plasma 5 code that wasn't properly ported to Plasma 6.
Mm-hmm.
So it would crash, and the only fallback for it was, for whatever reason, root. So I quickly deleted that that theme, and and the guy has removed it from the KDE store since, but what the hell? The SDDM lands you in root? And in a TTY, not in on a desktop, on the desktop, just in TTY root. If it did that, I can see if it did that and somebody didn't know what they were doing, they would delete their root without even knowing. So SDDM is kind of dangerous because it's an elevated kind of element. So,
well,
yeah,
depending
on be careful. Be careful.
On Neon, SDDM runs as the SDDM user. It doesn't always run as the SDDM user. There are other distros where it will just run as root, and then that's where you get the problems.
But I guess I was on Arch, so Arch behaves a little bit wonky.
Arch, I probably just runs it as root. I'm not certain. I have SDDM installed. I don't like login screens. I just boot up from the TTY. It's the way I've always done it.
Well, yeah. This is just me saying that you are absolutely correct. People need to be careful what they're installing, and I do agree to the point where you said during your discussion with David that they need to move the store away from their KDE domain.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where
this would be.
I don't know where it should go. I think KDE Look would be fine if they put on something like that. Or if they do keep it on the domain, do what the AUR does, where there's a big disclaimer. Like, in bold text, it's the first thing you see, this is unofficial, like, use with caution or whatever it says.
Use at your own risk. Just keep it. And I do also agree with the thing that you said, where it shouldn't be too wordy, because not a lot of people like to read. From my personal experience, even two sentences that I put on the website, still people don't read them, and they say, "Hey, I'm having issues running your script." I'm like, "Did you read? Why did you run the curl command 7 times? Now you have 7 instances of my repository." It just tells you in 2 sentences, run it from the app menu.
Mm-hmm.
What's not to understand? Oh, we missed that. I'm like, oh, you don't like to read. I get it. That's why I made the video.
Right. Well, how many people have you had asking you about, like, where Zero Linux has gone? And, like, how do I download Zero Linux? Where can I get it after everything's all changed?
I still get those questions to this day. I tried to download Zero Linux, but I can't find it. I'm like, it's gone. It's a script now. Come on, people. Didn't you get the memo?
No.
They were like, oh, we must have missed it. But I did mention it multiple times on Mastodon. I mentioned it I made a video about it. I made sure everybody was informed. But apparently, people miss a lot of things. So I'm used to it. If they ask me the question, here's a link to the video that'll explain everything. That's the reason I made the video. So, but yeah, moving towards better things is a good thing. But I'm really happy now, since I am the KDE person, because more and more distros are adopting KDE as their main thing, just like Fedora is planning to do. And
well, it's being discussed. It's not planning right now. I was talking to Josh before. They're having some meetings about it. They're going to bring it to the working group. It's not been blocked. That's the important thing. It's not been blocked, and they haven't recalled the change proposal. So they're still very much in the discussion phase, and things might happen. I wouldn't hold my breath, but if anything does happen, it'll probably end up being promoted like as a dual flagship. We have the option of either GNOME or KDE.
Well, I agree with the idea of dual, because GNOME being, as I told you earlier, GNOME being downgraded to a spin is not a good idea.
Yeah,
it would be wrong, because GNOME, the way they do things is they target professionals first, and gamers and casual users second.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas KDE, it's the opposite. It's tinkerers, geeks, customizers first, and then professionalism, it kind of blends in, but not really.
Sure.
So if they want to adopt KDE Plasma, it would be great. It'll make me happy. Maybe I'd switch to Fedora, but the KDE spin of Fedora needs to get more attention, and in order for it to get that, it needs to be promoted to kind of a flagship. So if it's next to GNOME, so users can choose which workstation they want, is a better idea. I'm 100% on board if they put it alongside GNOME, so users, or maybe in the installer, like somebody, like while you were scrolling on your video, there was a guy who mentioned we could have, in the last comment, I think, that was on the thread, the guy was saying, what if Anaconda had 2 options, either KDE or GNOME? Whatever the user selects, they will end up with.
There is some work getting that done. Because, like, Fedora KDE isn't just Fedora with KDE. There are some different things they do alongside that change. So it's not just a matter of changing out that package. But there is work in progress to get that done. And there are other distros like OpenSUSE that do make it that easy, where in the installer it's just like, you want to use KDE, you want to use GNOME. I think they might offer like Xsi and a couple others, and you just click the one you want, and then it just installs it for you. That probably is the best way to do it. But also, I think if they're not going to do that, just have both options there on the homepage. That's the quickest thing to do.
That's the quickest thing to do. And if they want to, if they decide to go on the ISO route, the Fedora server allows you to do that. If you download the Fedora server ISO, it's I think 5 gigabytes or something. It includes multiple desktop environments if you wish to install, but I think it installs them from online. It doesn't include all the packages on the ISO.
Otherwise, you can do the same thing with the 200 gigabytes. The Fedora Media Writer as well.
Yeah. So whichever route they choose to take, as long as they keep GNOME and KDE side by side, I'm 100% with that. But definitely it would make me happy because I don't think I'm going to switch desktop environments because since I have nothing to do, I've been testing various desktop environments on my laptop and various distros. I tried I tried Linux Mint Debian Edition. That was boring because it's stable.
Sure.
And for a geek like me, for a geek like me who likes to tinker, stable is not the right way to go. But I do recommend it for new users, definitely, because it's so solid. The only way to break it, because there's always a way to break the unbreakable, as I will mention in a bit, but the only way to break it is by messing with kernels.
Sure, yeah.
If you install a bleeding edge kernel, then definitely you're going to break it.
Right, right, right.
But I played with Linux Mint Debian Edition. I played with Rawhide. I stayed on Rawhide, Fedora Rawhide for a month. What can I say about Rawhide? It's more bleeding edge than Arch will ever be, because that's for developers.
Yeah. Yeah, I like people saying Arch is like a bleeding edge distro. No, no. It barely is cutting edge half the time. I don't know if you...
Yep.
Every so often I talk to Vaxxery about Hyperland, and prior to the current version, I think we were waiting about 2 months to get the package. There were like two big versions in between before Hyperland
which
got
brings
updated.
Which brings me to a good... transition. Hyperland.
Yes.
Okay, since you talk to Vaxxery a lot, what does he think about Arch Install's Hyperland profile?
Because I've not asked him about it, actually.
Because when I checked the Hyperland profile on Arch Install, it barely installs anything to get you up and running. It doesn't do, even if you select, and here's my nitpick with Arch Install.
Before you go into that, for anyone who doesn't know what Arch Install, just give a brief explanation of that.
Okay, Arch Install is a script that makes it easy to install Arch. It's written in Python. It makes it easy to select which drive you wanna install Arch on. So it allows you to select packages, any additional packages you want, and they have profiles, desktop profiles, window manager profiles, which they need to separate because when you select desktop, you got desktop and window managers. They need to separate the two. But you just select the desktop environment or window manager you want to install, and it will take care of the rest. It does everything that you don't want to bother with, like the Arch install guide on the wiki.
Yeah, basically just automates
if you
the
don't
Arch install
do
guide, effectively.
Yeah. It automates the Arch install guide. That's why it's called Arch install. And it's very minimal. It's just a Python script.
Very
minimal. It occupies barely a few megabytes on the ISO.
Well, also minimal in just what it does. Like, that's the other... That sort of goes into the profile thing.
I went through it last night because I did a fresh install. I went through it last night in 30 seconds.
Yeah. It gets you basically everything in the install guide. It's not going to do anything more than that. Actually, well, the advanced mode does have a couple other things, like you can enable... Can't you enable, like, multi-level something in the advanced mode? There's a couple of extra things
advanced mode adds two things.
Okay.
One of them being very good, parallel downloads.
I don't know why that's not just the default way Pac-Man works. I don't understand. Yeah.
The other one, it's going to make you laugh so hard, you're going to cough up a kidney.
Mm-hmm.
they allow you to select NTFS for the root partition. Let that sink in a little bit. Let that sink in.
For the root partition.
Not the boot partition, the root partition.
The root partition.
NTFS. That doesn't work with Linux.
Well, no, you can.
Why they included that?
You can do it.
It doesn't have the correct permissions. It doesn't use permission system. I tried it. It fails. You end up with in the TTY. The system will not boot.
Well, no, you can do it. It might just be set up completely wrong. You shouldn't do it.
I don't know how. If you add the --- advance and you go to the drive selection, and when it asks you what format that you want your file system in, the last choice is NTFS. So
maybe they don't even do they install the NTFS driver? Because that also could be the problem.
I don't know. I didn't check that deep because I thought that option was a little bit hilarious. Mm-hmm. And we tried it. We tried it in a VM. We selected NTFS. We went through the install. The install goes fine-ish. It complains about the permissions because everything is... when you select NTFS, everything is set to 777 permission.
Okay.
The way NTFS does. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's got some weird quirks. Arch install is not perfect. But this is my nitpick with Arch install when it comes to Hyperland and the NVIDIA drivers. For us mere little mortals who prefer NVIDIA for the NVENC encoder, it don't do the necessary for Hyperland to work correctly, because for Hyperland to work correctly, since it runs on Wayland, you need the NVIDIA modules and mkinitcpio and the mod probe and so on and so forth. This is a little bit technical, but those are basically the required things for NVIDIA to run on Wayland. They don't do that. They don't install the lib32, the 32-bit libraries. They don't install the full package stack for the driver. They just install three packages. NVIDIA-DKMS, at least they got that one right. And they install NVIDIA utils and NVIDIA settings. That's it. And if you and even if you enable the multilib repository, it's not going to grab any of the 32-bit libraries. Mm-hmm. So basically, when you select Hyperland, you will end up on a login loop. If you have an NVIDIA card, a login loop, because the Wayland stuff is not being applied.
Right.
So I'm like, and the Hyperland profile only includes 7 packages.
Yeah, Hyperland, for anyone just listening, it's Hyperland Dunst, Kitty, Dolphin, Woffy, the Hyperland portal, which is nice they include, Qt5 Wayland, and why do you include those? If you're going to include nothing, why do you include those? Qt5 Wayland and Qt6 Wayland.
You need Qt6. You don't no longer need
Qt5.
Well,
no, my point is, like, considering, like, how few packages are installed here, why even bother install those? Like, nothing you've installed needs them.
Yeah, exactly. And I understand that Hyperland is a meta package, because meta packages are necessary for correct install, but still, it doesn't install everything that is required. So basically,
Hyperland's
when you
not
select
a meta package. Wait, what do you mean Hyperland's a meta package?
Not a meta package, sorry. It's got dependencies. It brings with it the correct dependencies.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But it's not. So basically, what you end up if you with when you select the Hyperland profile is, if it logs in using Mesa, because Mesa does support Wayland, but just basic support, you will end up on the desktop with the anime image, the usual default wallpaper with the yellow bar on top telling you, okay, it's time to get to work, you lazy app. So basically, they don't do anything.
Yeah, I was looking at the Sway config. The Sway config, I think, is... like, I don't know what they're doing with these profiles. I feel like the profiles are kind of pointless. Like, I'm looking at the Sway config. The Sway one has Sway BG, which is how you set the background, Sway Lock, which is a lock screen, Sway Idle, Way Bar, D menu, not Woffy like the other one. I don't know why it uses D menu on Wayland anyway. Brightness CTL, Grim, Slurp, Pavu Control, which is a pulse audio
pulse
thing.
Yeah.
Foot, Exorg Wayland. Wait, the Hyperland one doesn't still Exorg Wayland, doesn't still X Wayland. What? Wait.
Nope.
I'm so confused. Why does this package. Okay, for anyone, any Arch devs who might be listening, can someone explain to me why these profiles exist? Like, I think it's a good idea, but why do they exist? Because in their current state, they don't make any sense.
There you go. Finally, you get to what my major nitpick is with profiles. That's why I created my own KDE one.
Well, they've got a nice framework here for making. I saw they've got a Python API for making custom profiles, and I think for that it's great. But the default ones here are completely pointless.
Completely. And here's the thing. For me, to be productive, for example, I need Dolphin plugins or Dolphin add-ons, whatever mm-hmm. package is called, because I maintain repositories. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you're maintaining repositories, you need to know which files have changed that you need to push and which files haven't been touched.
Mm-hmm.
When you install the Dolphin add-ons, there's a green check mark for unmodified files and the orange exclamation mark for files that have been modified that need to be pushed upstream.
Sure.
That's a visual confirmation what you need to do. And that adds to my workflow, makes me work much faster.
Mm-hmm.
Without those, I cannot function. That's why, that's the thing that got me ticked off. I was like, okay, you installed Dolphin, but where's the add-on? I need to install it myself. Mm-hmm. Regular users won't know about that. I put myself in the shoes of a regular user coming to KDE. If they select the profile in Arch install, they're going to get an incomplete experience, a mm-hmm. totally incomplete experience. And watching your KDE install video made me laugh so hard, I just wanted to jump off the balcony. but I knew who you were, and I knew you would figure things out eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what regular users will do. Regular users will just select the profile in Arch install, say, hey, those are developers. They know better. So we're going to trust them, mm-hmm. and we're going to install KDE that way. And they're going to judge KDE by the profile that Arch install provided.
Mm-hmm.
So if KDE gets a little bit of flack, sometimes, not always, it might stem from the fact that they installed it via the Arch install script, which is incomplete.
Yep.
So I'm like...
Here's my thought on Arch install, right? I think Arch install, they are... It's weird, right? Because it's trying to make the Arch installation process easier, and I think that's good, but I don't think they're going far enough for it to make sense. I don't think they need to have, a custom Hyperland config. I think doing that is way out of scope of what Arch Linux is, but I think if you're going to be having a profile for, Plasma, or a profile for Hyperland, or... A good example is the Sway and the Hyperland profiles. Why is the Hyperland profile far less functional than the Sway profile? There is zero reason to ever install a Wayland compositor and not install X Wayland. That doesn't make any sense to me. So they exactly. have these profiles here as a way to make it seem like there is an easy way to install a desktop, but then don't fully complete the profiles. So it just doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me what they're doing. Again,
they're targeting new users because new users are not gonna. We understood this. Everybody understood the fact that people will mostly refuse to go through the Arch way of doing things because.
Mm. Well, that's why things like Endeavor exist.
Exactly.
Or Arco, if you like Arco.
And that's why Zero Linux existed. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people didn't want to go through this convoluted way of reading the wiki, copy-pasting commands left and right, having to SSH to be able to do it more freely by copy-pasting commands instead of having to type them all in. But that's a way of targeting new users. But then those new users are going to judge whatever they install by the way Arch Install did things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fair to... What I'm saying is it's not fair to judge anything if you installed it via Arch Install. You need to get your hands dirty and do it yourself and build... Because that I am now, ever since I stopped maintaining Zero Linux, I have become a real ambassador of Arch. Like, if you want to build your system and know everything about your system from ground zero all the way to the way you want it, use Arch or use the likes of Gentoo or anything that asks you to dig your hands into the system. That's why I love it. I love building Arch brick by brick, because at least then, if I suffer any issues, I know where the issue comes from, because installed that package. Therefore, I caused my system to break, not Arch. Sometimes, issues slip through the cracks, through the Arch cracks. We've seen that with Grub. We've seen that with many things.
Yep, absolutely. We've seen that with
Glibc.
Yeah, Glibc, yeah.
Yeah, Glibc was one of the biggest issues we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But they did redeem themselves when the XZ issue showed up.
Yeah, that was really surprising. They weren't even affected. Yeah. And they're like, here, problem. Okay. Is someone else writing this blog post? Like, what's going on here? Arch never says anything in a reasonable amount of time, especially when it's not... Like, if it doesn't affect their core installation, Arch never says anything. Like, it needs to be part of, like, a base for it to be something they want to talk about half the time.
Yep.
Actually, I think in this case, I think XZ might be in base, but it just doesn't affect the install we have on Arch.
They updated the ISO. They released one on the 29th of March to include the fix. And then they released one on the 1st of April. So basically, they were on top of things. They were doing their job correctly. And I was really happy and surprised.
Yeah.
And they updated the package. It is in base, added dash two. Yeah, it is. And now they released another update to unlink it from SSHD. So anyway, Arch was not linking it to libzma, whatever it's called.
Libzma. Yeah.
So Arch was safe. So I'm like, Arch, safe? Fixing it? That's a surprise. But issues slip through the cracks from time to time on Arch, and it's the nature of every single distro. Like, issues slip through the cracks with Fedora. Issues slip through the cracks in Manjaro. Yesterday, I was watching my good friend Air Max. Kudos, Air Max, you're doing a great job. He encountered an issue where installing OBS from their repositories, because, who knew? Manjaro have OBS on the repositories. I didn't know that. But if you install OBS from their repositories, they include a driver, VDAPU, lib32 VDAPU driver. If you install that, OBS will not launch. He caught it on stream. I reported it directly upstream to Art, to Manjaro. They're going to fix it with the eventual release of Manjaro with Plasma 6, because they're still on Plasma 5. And guess what? Manjaro, for being rolling, they're still on the 6.6 LTS kernel.
What? I guess that's... If it's an LTS kernel, I guess that's fine. Like,
Their ISO is from December.
Did everyone just take a break for the past 5 months? What are they?
Yeah, it's okay. A long break, but...
Sure.
and once you update the system after installation, you will get a 2.5 gigabyte update.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still on Plasma 6, and you're still on kernel 6.7.
Do you mean
Plasma 5? Yeah. And yeah, they are still on Plasma 5. They don't upgrade to Plasma 6 since they maintain their own packages.
Mm.
And the maximum kernel you're going to get that you'll have to manually upgrade to using their Manjaro settings is 6.7. In their repositories, they still have 6.8 RC6.
Look, I guess it's fine. Manjaro's doing the Manjaro thing, I guess.
Yeah, but come on. And they have rolling on their website.
They're just rolling very slowly.
Excuse me, but that's... They're rolling very slowly. They're dragging a truck behind them. They're going so slow.
Manjaro's always been like that, though. Like, it's nothing new.
But if it's stable, why complain?
Sure,
it just
works.
Minus OBS. Forget about OBS. They're going to ship a working version at some point. But
look, maybe it's
content
broken.
Creators, it's
broken, so they forced you to go run the Flatpak, because then you can actually have a working version of the application. You shouldn't be running the native package anyway.
Speaking of, since I'm suffering the NVENC issue on my OBS, having to go software, but I had a discussion with the developers over at OBS Central on Discord. Had to ask the question because I wanted to have a clear answer to give to users once they ask me. I was like, which package format is the official package format for OBS?
Flatpak.
Come on, developers. Yes. Another one.
Ubuntu's package.
Ubuntu from the PPAs. Yes.
I think that's all. I don't know.
Those two packages.
One.
Yeah, that's all. Only those two packages are considered official by the OBS team. But they no longer have a GitHub repository for the Flatpak package. Now you go directly to their GitHub
in the
project.
OBS project.
To the OBS project. So any issues you report there, they don't go through Flathub. So in case you suffer any issues, you have to report over there. But I quickly learned that reporting issues there, you might get less than nice replies.
Right.
It was one of the developers replied to me, "Hey, if you don't know how to use Linux, why are you reporting issues?" I'm like, what? What? Because he asked me something I never... Basically, what happened was he asked me to do things that I never done before because it was never required.
Sure.
Like, set the FB buffer to zero, set the psychedelic, post-psychedelic processing to disabled and do this and do that. I was like, yeah, if you point me where to change them, I will, and I will post the correct log.
It
was like, okay, you don't know how to use Linux, let someone else report it, basically. I'm like, what?
Okay, sure.
Thanks for that, but I'm still in discussion with Titan 652.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this person. If in case you don't, he maintains his own version of OBS package on the AUR, and it's a very complete package, but please don't try compiling that, because unless you want to go through the countless minutes, if not hours, depending on your system specs, compiling the Chromium stuff for
the CES stuff is probably the worst part. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes me on my 3600X, 32 gigs of RAM, it takes me 2 hours and a half. So.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I've got a similar system that takes me like 10 minutes.
10 minutes? Maybe they fixed the package. Maybe there was something wrong with the package. But because back in the day when I used to compile it, used to take 2 hours and a half. And I was like, what?
Uh-huh.
Maybe because it's my connection having to download large sums of libraries or whatever.
Yeah.
Your
compiling definitely shouldn't take that long. But downloading the source code could be an issue.
Yeah, especially when they asked me to compile the Flatpak, where it needed to pull in the entire FFmpeg source.
Speaking of things that might take a bit to compile.
Yeah, that the entirety of the thing, the repository is around 700 megabytes, give or take, and then it has to compile all that and pull it. I was like, yeah, it failed mid cloning the repository because my connection is only 8 megabits down.
Yeah.
So, I'm not. I was like, yeah, you guys need to figure something out. But anyway, it's just a message I want to pass along to everyone watching this or listening to this. If you have an NVIDIA card and you want to use the flatback version of OBS and the NVENC encoder, it's currently broken. They don't know where the issue is coming from, but so far they have narrowed it down to and you're using Plasma.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it works on other desktop environments. I don't know. I don't use anything else, but it might be because of the KDE SDK 6.6.
Right.
So they narrowed it down to that, but they're doing a lot of internal testing to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
For now, it's broken. If you're a content creator and you rely on NVENC, use software rendering until the issue is taken care of.
I'm an AMD user.
So, lucky you. But yeah, this is it's been plaguing me because when you use the CPU, there will be a lot of audio hitches, like small ones. They're barely perceivable.
And I get them as well, but they're less...
I noticed in the last... Yeah, in the latest few videos.
Yeah, I don't... Like, I've had that for a while. I tend to cut them and re-record. That's just a flat... Like, it's just like a flat issue with capturing with Pipewire. Like, there's no way to get around that. I've had a bunch of people tell me about that problem.
Yeah, and I think it's Pipewire because recently they have released a lot of updates. They've been pushing update after update after update because there are some users complaining about a certain buzz in their audio that I'm having
that
issue right
recently,
now.
Recently, my speakers, if I just don't have a audio track playing, if it's just silent, they'll just start buzzing. So that's fine.
Yeah. I have that issue in the store downstairs. But yeah, Pipewire has, but they're working on it because if they weren't, they wouldn't have had so many updates.
Here's my thought, right? The Pipewire developers remembered that software is supposed to be buggy, so they decided to inject some bugs because it's been great for like 3 years now. No problems at all, but they're like, hey, guys, there actually are problems here. Let's pay attention to that. Like the one I was talking about earlier, the one I posted about over on Mastodon. I've not made the issue yet, but I've had this issue while streaming. And I've replicated it when I'm not streaming as well, so it seems to just be flat out an issue. So I capture my console gameplay with capture card, and then I use the pass through to show that on my screen and also show it in OBS because I don't like playing off of the OBS preview. So I have to swap the output on my main display over from like my desktop over to the gameplay capture over to like HDMI. So in OBS, I'm still capturing the desktop, but I'm also capturing the video output from the capture card. So I've still got like a portal running there that's capturing the desktop.
Yeah.
And if I change my volume level, all of my Pipewire outputs vanish. Pipewire seg faults, and then it recovers. And every time I change my volume level, it seg faults and then recovers. And it usually disconnects my microphone as well, so I need to re-add my microphone back into OBS. And yeah, it's just a mess right now.
Wait. You're having the same issue as me? Like now, OBS doesn't even knows that my microphone is there because... Mm. Okay, in case people don't know, I'm from Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's across the pond, way thousands and thousands of miles away from Brody here. But we have power outages constantly. It's like part of life because it's been happening since the 80s. Since I'm an 80s kid, I got used to it. But every time the power goes and the generator kicks in, mm-hmm. my microphone just disappears because it's a USB microphone, and the power and the UPSs that I'm using, mm-hmm. they're very cheapo UPSs. They're just a small box with batteries. I'm not using online UPSs, which people should use with auto voltage regulation. Without that, you're going to suffer the issue I'm suffering. The thing that happens is the power goes down, and when it comes back, it doesn't come back fully because we use 220 volts over here. Mm-hmm. So it comes at 130 volts, and then it slowly goes back, it normalizes.
Right.
But when it comes back so low, the UPS is not providing enough because it doesn't have any auto voltage regulation thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come back powerful enough to feed all the USB ports in the computer.
Mm.
So the 5 volts, because USB ports use 5 volts. Mm-hmm. So it's they're not getting the 5 volts. They're getting maybe 2.5, 220.
2.20. 220, so that's not enough. You don't want to send 220 to USB.
So basically, the microphone doesn't have enough power to get recognized by the system. Mm. So I have to unplug it, wait for the power to normalize, plug it back in every single time. Mm-hmm. Like imagine that during recording of a video.
Right.
You're talking to the camera, you're moving your hands, and suddenly you look at OBS and the audio is gone.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my issue is not related to power outages, but yeah, it's very much a similar style of issue. Luckily, I can just change the output in OBS. I don't need to unplug anything. So I just swap from like my camera to my my mic to my camera, and then swap back, and then it just recovers.
That happens to me also. The microphone does not go, but OBS, I have to go to audio settings, select a default, and then hit OK, then reopen settings, select the mic, hit OK, then it will see it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that happens too, but I have even more issues, especially when I'm connecting the what I'm using right now is my cell phone, my iPhone. So sometimes the Wi-Fi flickers a little bit, so I lose connection with virtual camera. A lot of issues, but mostly pipe. When it comes to pipe wire, it's buzzing noises. Mm-hmm. It's like when I'm watching a YouTube video and the volume changes on the microphone of the person talking, it does, and then it continues with the thing. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to do the content creation with all these issues? Because I'm relying on content creation now to make a living, mm-hmm. trying to at least, by being consistent. Every Monday and Friday, there's a video. And at the end of the month, there will be a live, like tomorrow. It was supposed to be at the end of March, but since it was Easter, I had to postpone it.
Right.
So this Friday, tomorrow, I'll be going live and hoping for the best, crossing my fingers that where Pipewire will not give me shit and the power will not go. But it's always fun to see the lights go off for 2 minutes and then come back on during a live stream. But I deal with things as they come. That's what being a Linux contributor taught me, or Linux user taught me. Patience. Because with Linux, you have to be patient, especially when you're using rolling distros like Arch, Gentoo, and so forth. You learn a lot of patience. You learn to read. You learn to grasp a lot of information. And that's not a hit on custom-based distros. They do their thing their way. They have their own fans, basically. Mm-hmm. But for me, as a ultimate Linux geek, if I don't do things manually myself, I might as well go back to Windows.
Sure. No, that's understandable. Yeah, well, I run Arch myself as well, so, like, you know.
Yeah, and as Brody saw earlier before we started recording, I don't use any Windows. I use Windows 2000. Well, there's a reason for that. It's in a VM, number uh-huh. one. Number two, there's a reason. It's because I'm an avid classic games collector.
Right.
And in order to play classic games, especially ones that run in DOS, you need an old version of Windows. And the best old version of Windows is Windows 2000, for me at least. It's very stable. And I recently got into the Star Wars and Star Trek classics, like Klingon Academy and stuff like that. So yeah, I need a classic Windows to be able to run those. So might as well run Windows 2000. But I haven't used Windows in the past 4 years. I haven't even had the thought of going back to Windows because I've seen the nightmare that Windows has become. But in its own defense, they're doing WSL correctly.
Yeah, I think WSL is really cool. Yeah,
you can now run GUI Linux GUI app.
Yeah, it's run. They run through Wayland.
And they now include systemd.
Okay, that's really cool.
Yeah, so I'm like, well, at least Windows is giving Linux a shot more than we thought they would. So if you're on Windows and you want to try Linux out just to get your hands wet, you can with WSL. Now it's a good excuse. We can use that. So yeah, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the XZ thing that just happened.
Yeah.
We touched on it earlier a bit, but it didn't affect a lot of people because most people use LTS releases.
Yeah, most for anyone Linux who users. Doesn't know it, so the XZ issue was, it had been in the package for about 2 months, but none of those packages were shipping on stable releases. So it was very, very close to shipping on Fedora 40. If it had lasted a couple more weeks, it would have been on Fedora 40. And it could have been on Ubuntu 24.04 as well if it lasted a bit longer. But, yeah, it got caught. So it was only on your rolling releases like Arch, Gentoo, Void had it, and on your unstable like developer releases like Rawhide, Sid, things like that. Tumbleweed.
I just watched a video last night that put me to sleep, but it was a very, very in-depth video where they went through the infograph you showed in yours. And they talked about, and the guy replicated the issue in a VM. He showed us the script running, backdoor running in a VM, the sandbox environment, basically.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. It injects, it takes his key and injects it on top of yours and makes it look like a valid key for the user, for the developer to gain access to your system. And we need to put an asterisk here, it affected distributions that linked SSHD to LibLZMA.
Because of a custom patch made in OpenSSH. Yeah.
Yep.
That was the issue. It was specifically a custom patch, which I believe... I know Debian ships it, Red Hat ships it, I think SUSE also ships it.
SUSE.
It was a fairly common patch, but Arch doesn't ship it because for the most part Arch, there's some cases where it's not like this, but for the most part Arch ships whatever upstream gives. So in this case, they don't do it, so not a problem.
And that affected distros that built via the tarball. Not source, directly from source.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't recommend running the source. I don't particularly like the approach that Arch has taken for dealing with the issue. Because most other distros like Debian, like Gentoo, they rolled back to an old version. Whereas Arch decided to build off of the source, but stayed within the zone of issues. It's just source doesn't have the activation command. So it's probably fine, But I don't think it's the best approach. I think what the other distros did was better. The issue with Arch going back is if they did that, and Gentoo has this issue right now, where Gentoo rolled back even further. So yeah. Gentoo users now have to basically rebuild the entire system, and the Arch packages probably didn't want to rebuild every single package that was affected.
Yeah, exactly. And the way Ubuntu did it, and they named their package because the way their repository works, their update system works, you have to increment the version by a higher version. If you downgrade it, it will not downgrade.
Right, yeah, the fake downgrade they did, yeah.
Yeah, the fake downgrade. So they called it 5.6.1, but really, plus really 5.4.5.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, that's how they cheated the system, basically their upgrade system, by adding plus really 5.4.5. That was funny. That was really funny. When I saw that, I was like, oh, okay.
Well, that's... but it doesn't really matter what it's called, right? As long as they are getting away from the affected version. If they're going to do a downgrade, if they're going to do a fake downgrade where the system gets tricked into thinking it's a downgrade, or if you're going to do what Arch did and just go to the source, something had to be done. You couldn't keep that on people's systems, that's for sure.
Exactly. And Gentoo went back as far as 5.4.3.
Yeah, that's
and they
that's
locked
why
it there.
Yeah, that's why there's some world issues.
Yeah. So each distro does things their own way, mm-hmm. weird as they might be, but as long as the issue is no longer there, we're safe.
That we're aware of. We don't really know. We know.
We're still digging into it.
Yeah, we know that the SSH issue has been dealt with. We don't know the full extent of what the target was and the full extent of what the backdoor was running. We know it was messing with SSH keys, but it's still being examined. I think so far that's the only issue that has been found.
And not only that, but firmware updater by GNOME was updated to use ZSTD instead of XZ.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of packages are now moving away from XZ.
Yeah, when I did my video on the situation, I had the number 151 dependencies on Arch. By the time I did my video, it was 145.
Yeah, they're slowly moving away. And since Arch uses ZSTD by default, they need to switch everything to... But that brings me to the subject of the poor main developer just lost his project.
Mm-hmm.
Not the co-maintainer. The co-maintainer mm-hmm. is the person who injected the code.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to go into judging here. But the fact that the main developer who is recovering from burnout just had this thrusted on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And now he doesn't know what to do. And he's slowly losing ground because mm-hmm. more and more packages are shifting to a different dependency.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel for the guy. I feel for the guy. I'm
sure.
Like,
yeah.
He has been relying on this person to help him maintain the package all this time, only to get stabbed in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So things happen. Things happen. Like many weirder things have happened, like in the 30 days,
oh,
thanks to your
God.
Video.
Man, 30 was such a ridiculous situation. That debt, for anyone, I don't even know the full details anymore. It was so dumb. Because they, like, went on some
so dark
psycho
too.
Rant as well. And, like, they were just randomly spending money on things. Like, I got a donation from them at some point. It was like a $100 donation from them. Like, what are you doing with this money?
But in the end, it ended on a darker note where he committed suicide.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. So it took a dark turn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I said, stranger things have happened. So
yeah.
Don't be surprised. And I want to tackle a subject now with you that is very near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be to you too.
Mm-hmm.
Stemming from the XZ situation.
Right.
The fact that people think that automatically by using Linux, you're immune to such things. This is the wrong thing to think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, macOS is not immune. Windows definitely is not immune. Nor is Linux.
I think
Linux as an operating operating system is secure.
Mm-hmm.
Linux as a, as an operating system is secure. But it is only as secure as the things you put on it.
Right.
So do not think that you are safe from viruses. When they tell you, oh, Linux is safe from viruses. No, that ain't true. Just as we just saw with XZ. If you're targeted, you're targeted, no matter what operating system you're running. It doesn't matter. If the malicious actor wants to do malicious things to your system, they will. They will find vulnerabilities here and there. And specifically in Linux, it's going to be easier because of the open source nature of it. Because they have access to the entire code. They know what to target, where to target, and when to target. So, yeah, this Linux is more secure. Yes, as an operating system, it is. It's, as I said, as secure as the things you put on it. If you don't read the PKG builds of AUR packages, and you just willy-nilly install them just like that because you want the package, and suffer problems, well, there's only one person to blame, not the developer, because that was their intent from the beginning. It's you who didn't read the package build. You didn't take the time to scan the code. That's why on my website, I included a button that will allow you to inspect my script before you run it, to have a peace of mind.
So, I think a lot of people...
That's why the PKG builds exist.
I think a lot of people just don't want to take responsibility for anything they do. Like... there's this idea like, oh, well, I didn't know, it's the developer's fault for doing it. And yeah, like, if a developer ships something that is malicious, absolutely the developer is wrong for doing that. But at the end of the day, you are the only person out there that is going to be able to keep your system safe. Like, there are people out there who are going to do something malicious, and that's bad, and those people should be dealt with. But... before they get dealt with, it's your job to make sure you don't deal with them.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you don't want to deal with such things, look at what happened with Ubuntu, for example, and Snap, and all these malicious crypto mining.
Yeah.
Look at that. Ubuntu, the distro that's most commonly used by Linux beginners, and they use crypto wallets and what have you. Just okay, click. Okay, so it's Ubuntu. It's got a certain amount of backing from Microsoft. It's this big thing. They're not gonna ship me malicious code, so I'm gonna blindly trust everything they ship in their Snap store. Guess what? As recent times have proved that, yeah, even they aren't safe.
Well, the Snap case was just insane. The fact that they were running an app store with zero human verification. Like, that is wild. How they got away with doing that for so long. And it's not that they got away with doing it. They got called out for doing it back in October last year. And then just kept doing it. Like, they had the exact same situation happen last year.
And I do agree when you said that the KDE response was better than Plasma's response when it came to such issues, where they took it upon themselves
to do
something about it.
Like, Canonical has taken some responsibility for it, very minor, but they didn't do so until they got called out for it, and it took them like a week to do anything. Whereas the Plasma devs, the day the global theme thing happened, there was a post out. Like, David Edmondson was talking about it. Other KDE developers were like, yeah, okay, this is a problem. And they were working on it straight away, like, very clearly working on it. Maybe Canonical was doing things internally that we didn't know about, but nothing was being said, and it took a really long time to get any sort of response about it.
The issue with that is, since Ubuntu, or Canonical's Ubuntu, is such a major distro, they needed to be more vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because people...
All they said is, like, one... It wasn't even official. They had an official announcement eventually, but initially it was, like, a comment on another thread. And it was just a post on the forum. Like, it's not a big news announcement or anything. It was a very, very minor thing.
Yeah. So I was like, if it happened to Ubuntu, then definitely it's going to happen to rolling releases and stuff like Arch and Gentoo. I was like, And then we saw the thing happen with KDE Plasma. I was like, there we go. And that's what scares me. The higher the adoption is for Linux, the more targeted it gets by malicious actors.
Yes.
That's why when people start saying, this year is the year of the Linux, I'm like, you know what's going to come when it becomes the year of the Linux? Desktop? You're going to get attacked, targeted more and more.
I think before anything gets too big, we need to have people putting systems in place to deal with problems. Like FlatHub, for example. FlatHub does human verification. They do human verification for both uploading a package and also getting a package verified. So you can't do, like, with the verification system, basically it's either putting a token onto your website or linking the source repo. Someone checks that. So you can't just go and upload a Flatpak and then claim that you're the, like, developer of Upstream. They will check what you're trying to connect to it and say, okay, well, is this actually the correct thing? Yes, get verified. No, piss off.
Big example of that, Steam. And the whole situation with the Steam Flatpak, where the Valve developers are like, don't install the Flatpak, please.
Oh, well, no, and the yet... Flatpak is the least problematic. It's the Snap that's a lot worse.
The Snap is a lot worse. I'm not saying it's the worst, but the situation with Steam on FlatHub needs to be dealt with. They need to remove the check, the verified badge from it.
Is it verified
because
on FlatHub? What?
Wait. It is verified.
Oh, no, it's verified it on Snap. It's not verified on FlatHub.
It's verified on FlatHub as well. But it's they don't write Valve next to the check mark. They check verified by FlatHub.
No, it's marked as unverified right now.
Oh, they updated it. Okay, so they fixed the issue. They must have updated the issue when they started putting the unverified.
Maybe.
Flag. But before then, because I... in my toolkit, there's an option called game launchers, where users can select whatever game launchers they want to install.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't opt for the Flatpak version of Steam because it had the faulty checkmark next to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think because of your video and other people's videos, they saw the issue and they rectified it. But
I don't know.
They had the checkmark and people were complaining, why did it have the checkmark when it's not by Valve?
I don't even remember Valve complained about that.
Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was someone else. But a lot of people complained about, hey, it's a false positive. We cannot trust this thing and that. But now that they put the unverified, it's much more clearer because even Valve complained about it. Valve were like, no, this is not the way Steam was meant to be shipped. Do not try. The only official package for Steam, surprisingly enough, is the dev package.
Yeah, well, that's because
that's the only official one.
Well, they started shipping Linux for Steam not that long before the original Steam machines, and the original Steam machines were Debian based.
Yeah,
and also obviously Ubuntu is Debian based as well.
Yeah, so naturally, it's a dev package.
Mm-hmm.
And they do mention in their article on Valve's website, they do mention if you want to download Steam, figure out a way to either install it from source or install the dev package. Those are the only two ways to install Steam.
Considering that the Steam Deck is Arch-based, I really wish they just either got the Flatpak dealt with or released an official Arch package. I think that would be the first big project that had an official Arch package.
That's another thing I don't understand. On Arch, you have two packages. You got Steam and Steam native runtime.
Mm-hmm.
So which one is to be trusted more than which?
The runtime is the runtime, not the actual client.
when you install the native Dash runtime, it installs the native client, and it installs the runtime library.
Steam is optional as a dependency by the looks of it.
On Arch, they make it a dependency.
Yeah, it's marked as... Oh, sorry, no, I'm reading it wrong. No, I'm stupid. no, okay. Steam is required by the runtime. Yeah, okay, no, you are right. I'm reading that completely wrong.
Yeah. So, which one do you install? So, basically, in my toolkit, I wasn't sure, so I just made my toolkit install Steam, and it works.
Yeah,
I have Steam without the runtime.
I never even thought of it. I just install Steam.
Yeah. It doesn't ask you what runtime do you want, what this, what that. It just installs the client, and mm-hmm. you're up and running, and you don't need to deal with all that shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Why does the other one exist? So which one will the user trust more? It's weird. It's a weird situation that I don't understand.
Well, the native runtime is installing the Steam libraries.
Yeah, and it asks you which ones you want for NVIDIA, AMD, Intel, etc., etc., etc.
It's been so long since I've installed Steam. Well, I installed it like 3 years ago, and I've never uninstalled it, so...
Well, here's the situation. When you install just a regular Steam package, mm-hmm. it will install, you launch it, it works.
Sure.
When you install the native Dash runtime, it will ask you which runtimes do you want. If you have an Intel card, you select the Intel one. If you have the AMD card, you select the VAMD, whatever.
Right.
If you have NVIDIA, the NVIDIA libraries, and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. What's the difference? If I install the regular one, it just works. And if I install the native runtime, it's going to ask me all these questions for a new user. They're not going to know what to answer.
I think most people would probably just install Steam and not even think about it.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's what I opted in, what I opted for in my toolkit. Just
yeah, I didn't
Steam
even know there was that distinction, because I've only ever installed the Steam package itself.
Yeah, maybe that's why the Valve is like, use the deb or source, fuck everything up. Basically.
Well, in the case of Steam, there isn't source. There is no source package for it.
Well, I get the idea.
They
just
ship a binary, that's it.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, it's like the situation with OBS. Mm-hmm. Either install the Flatpak or install the deb file.
Mm-hmm.
Don't install anything else. Same thing with bottles. ship the Flatpak package. Don't trust anything else.
I know there was like discussion of maybe doing an app image at some point, but yeah, right now just Flatpak.
But you notice that this kind of thing is happening over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's getting a lot more common, yeah.
It's becoming a lot more common, but yet more confusing for the end user.
Sure.
Extension. Mm-hmm. Because they now don't know which package to trust. Some people say trust this, other people say trust that. Everybody wants to protect their own package manager, basically. Mm-hmm. I think we need to stop that. And people keep yelling at me, why are you using Flatpaks? Why are you using Snaps? Why are you using this? Why are you using that? I trust what the main developers say.
Mm-hmm.
They created the package. They know what they are shipping. So if they tell you not to use a certain package manager's version, don't use it. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of streamers, content creators out there that just install OBS from the Arch repositories, and they mm-hmm. complain, oh, I don't have that plugin. I have to manually install this, and I have to manually... Did you know that if you install OBS from FlatHub, they need... there's only you, I think, Mint who does that, but
mm-hmm.
everybody else, they're not doing it. They're not putting the plugins, the FlatHub plugin, the OBS plugins on FlatHub on their GUI stores. If mm-hmm. you go on the GNOME Software Center, you look up OBS plugins, you're not going to see any. Mm-hmm. You go to PAMAC, Manjaro, you search up OBS plugin, you're not going to see any. Unless they package it from the AUR for the native package, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about the Flatpak plugins.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show you anything. Only Mint in their store will they show you.
Yeah, I do everything from the CLI anyway, so I've never even noticed that. Huh. That's weird.
Not everyone uses a is comfortable with a CLI. That's another problem.
Well, here's the thing. When I'm looking for a plugin, usually what I do is I go to the plugin's repo, and the repo will usually tell me like how to install it.
A lot. They need to put forth the links to the GitHub.
To be fair, I don't use many. I don't think I have any plugins installed right now.
Well,
I'm not
the way I did it.
Guy.
Well, the way I did it in my toolkit is I created a meta package, sort of a meta package, but basically it's install this, basically all of them. So I added OBS and all the plugins that exist on FlatHub. Mm-hmm. And then users are free to uninstall the ones they don't want to.
Right.
But yeah, there's at least 36 plugins currently on FlatHub. So when they install OBS using my toolkit, they're going to get a complete OBS experience. They're going to have the game capture with the OBS VLK capture. They're going to get all the background removal plugins, the Pipewire plugins. And finally, and this is good news to a lot of content creators out there, now you can capture per application audio. They included that plugin for OBS. It's part of OBS. Now.
There are ways you could already do it. But you need to like make it Jack clients and stuff.
But now it's as simple as just adding. It's right there. Application audio capture Pipewire.
Okay.
It's right there.
That's good.
It's been in the works for the past 4 years. So finally, we can now capture per application audio, and I do that. For tomorrow, I will be doing that for tomorrow's live, or I'll be capturing, I don't know if it's copyright infringement, but Spotify's audio.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm using Heller's audio. He creates DMCA-free music.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be wrong. And I don't have ads because I have a premium account. So I'll be capturing Spotify. I just don't want to bother adding each audio track separately. I just capture Spotify's audio and
you wouldn't be the only person who streams like that. That's like massive streamers do the same thing.
Yeah, so at least we can now do that thanks to a plugin, thanks to OBS developers finally embedding it in OBS.
Mm-hmm.
After 4 years of people complaining that the plugin no longer has a binary.
I just looked at my OBS version. It looks like I haven't updated my Flatpak in a while. I am a whole major version behind.
You're on 30.0?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I should update, yeah.
Well,
I'll do that after.
You are on AMD. You shouldn't suffer
fine, yeah.
But for us NVIDIA users, we need, because you know how NVIDIA drivers, Flatpak drivers. I'm not talking about the system drivers, the binaries. I'm talking about the Flatpak drivers. They get updated, but if OBS is not updated along with them, it will cease to launch.
That actually can happen with the AMD drivers. The range seems to be a lot bigger, but I have had issues where it just forgets my AMD drivers exist. I can launch it, but when I start to record, it's like missing encoder or something like that.
Yeah. So, we content creators rely on Flatpaks on OBS so much. A minor hiccup sends, at least it sends me into a young boy's tantrum. I throw a fit, and I'm like, oh, shit! OBS is not working. There goes my day. There goes... I'm not making thousands of dollars on YouTube, so I shouldn't care that much. Mm-hmm. I barely make $7. So I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't throw a tantrum. But it gets that way sometimes with OBS because we rely on it so much.
Yeah. Well, I was in the middle of...
Anyway.
When I found the issue I was talking about earlier, I just basically stopped my stream in the middle of it, and I started just bringing up the systemd logs for Pipewire. Like, you know what? We're going to debug this right now on stream. I'm going to work it out, and we'll report it afterwards.
Yeah, which brings me to a question.
Mm.
When are we going to see you do all the mistakes on stream?
What do you mean?
You you posted about it on Mastodon. You were like, should I record all my errors and all my mistakes and leave them up there?
Oh, record a video and just don't edit anything. I don't know. I might upload that for like next April Fools or something. I don't know. I'll do it at some point. It will have to be like a one-off thing. Because when I record a video, it takes me about an hour. I am really bad at speaking.
Takes you only an hour?
I've spent 3 years doing this, so I've got some ability to talk a little bit, but... I also note things out beforehand, so I have an idea of what I'm going to say. It's just I am terrible at reading things when I'm talking.
You're not the only one. People did recommend me to do highlights and to know what I need to talk about.
Yeah, I wouldn't say go full script, but just like have a general set of
dot
points.
Just highlights.
Just
highlights. Just
bullet
points.
Just keep
you
on track, yeah.
I did that. I said more ahs and ums than I ever did.
Right. It's something you got to get used to.
Yeah, I could never read a bullet point and then turn back to the camera and talk. I'm like, okay, I need to talk about that.
Yeah.
I start talking about it and then I lose my trail of thought immediately.
Because
in my head, I need to get to the next bullet point and the next one and the next one and the next one.
Right,
so
again, this is
gave up all that.
This is something I've spent multiple years getting better at. When I first started doing it, it was a mess. I was very much the same way. But now that I've done that for... Don't ask me how many videos. It's something I'm a lot more used to doing now, and you can still like tell when I'm looking at one or the other, but my flow is a lot less jumpy.
It's a lot better because it keeps me hooked from beginning to end. I never skip through your video. Skip through your videos.
So my videos have gotten more scripted as I've gotten further, but a lot of the things you hear are very much off the cuff. Like, I will see what's written there. So I usually do all of the planning one day and then do the video, like the recording another day. So I will read what I've got written there and I think, I don't know what the hell you are talking about. Why did you write that? And then I just basically update it as I go.
Yeah. So, for me, I can't do that. I just go off the cuff and I forget. Like, do you think that the tendency of saying that like the video, subscribe if you're not subscribed, do we need to say that? Just show it on screen. And
yeah,
that's
I do
it.
An overlay that shows it. I don't know. I don't know. Like, the YouTube meta is always a weird thing. People, it was like when I first started doing videos, everybody was saying that at the time. So.
As soon as I say it, I lose my trail of thought, and I have a lot of... But now I got better at it. I just, instead of saying ahs and ums, I just put silence. And it's like a cue for me to cut.
Right.
Remove that part and say the thing. And I do mention at the end that, because I need support, financial support. If I tell the people, if you want to join, or you can support me on, like you do say at the end, if you want to join those beautiful people. Yeah, it's kind of like that. But as content creators, we need to keep people up to date that we do this for free, but it doesn't mean that we can continue if it's always for free.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, content creation is fun. It can be cumbersome at times because you need to know what to say, when to say. I'll eventually get the rhythm back because I haven't been doing YouTube for a whole year. Tomorrow I'm going to do this live thing. It's going to be the only live I'm going to do alone because talking to the camera and answering chat is kind of weird to me. I like to have another person to bounce ideas off of.
Fair, yeah.
So... we'll see where that goes with time, but it's a single live every month, so it's not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but there's one thing I want to say is Linux is a lifesaver. Because for people like me who have not a lot to do if they work short jobs, like they have maybe 6 hours a week or whatever, Linux will keep you occupied. Windows, not so much. macOS, even less. So if you want to occupy and learn in the process, Linux is the way to go. It's not because it's safer, because as we saw recently, it's not. It's just because it keeps you learning on your toes. And who knows? Maybe you can create a career out of it, because there is a career in Linux, contrary to what people think. People think because it's free and open source, that there's no way to make money out of it. No, there is. You can create a script, put put your project behind the correct license, and make money out of it. It doesn't mean that you cannot make money. Like, look at the Ubuntu, the Windows.
That one. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking of another one. Yeah. Okay.
It's charging $40.
Please don't actually $40? Buy it, because it's a rebrand of another scam distro. Yeah.
Lindos, was it?
Yeah.
And then that was called Linspire, and then
yeah, and basically evolved. They claim things that are just not possible, like they have much better Wine support than other distros, and they've never indicated they've shipped any sort of additional patches, and just the things that their distro claims is basically nonsense as a way to get people to, I guess, support them? I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but look at... And they've sold so many copies. We don't know the real number because they have this static number, 10,000 sold, whatever. Yeah, right. It's stuck at 10,000, been stuck at 10,000 for the past 2 years. So, but look at them. They're making money out of a scam distro. You can make money out of anything on Linux. Just do the right thing.
Yeah, you could start. The right, you could make fake crypto apps and put them on the Snap Store and steal people's Bitcoin.
You can even do that, but please don't.
Yeah, please don't do that. I'm not recommending you go to prison. They will find
and
you.
The other day, because we have a podcast unrelated to Zero Linux, it's called NTA, No Tux Allowed. It's not No Linux Allowed. It's a misnomer. I came up with the name. I was like, we need to be weird. Since it's Josh, Big Pod, and I, three weirdos making a podcast. So we need to make it equally as weird. So I came up with the NTA, No Tux Allowed name. But we were talking about this subject. We were like, you think on Linux there's no such thing as piracy?
What? Like,
there is.
Okay.
I'll give you a major example.
Sure.
IntelliJ, because they have services behind paywalls.
Sure.
Circumvented with patch binaries. Same thing goes for something much smaller. It's called Sublime Text and Sublime Merge.
I guess
because people got annoyed with the pop-up that continuously shows up whenever they save a lot.
Yeah, I guess
remember this project is free and open source. Pay us.
There's people that also have like custom Spotify clients that like skip the ads. What?
Are you using it? Used to. That's what got me into paying a premium subscription, because when you block the ads, it gets your account banned.
Yeah, they don't like that.
Very easy.
Crazy.
Imagine very that. Easily. So don't use patch binaries, because that's opening the door for malicious code on your system.
Imagine that.
Exactly. So the same thing that exists on Windows exists on Linux. I guess you didn't know that, did you?
Well, obviously there's also a lot of game piracy and stuff, especially now that Proton's gotten as good as it has been.
And bottles. Trust me. Bottles? I caught someone. I don't pirate games anymore. I just get, thank the Lord for GOG, because the way they remove all DR, all manners of DRMs from games, and they sell you the game outright. You own the installer. You don't need to rely on them to reinstall the game. You don't have to re-download the game, specifically a game that's 140 gigs on an 8 megabit connection.
yeah. That'd take a bit.
So, yeah. So, but with bottles, if you have a pirated game, you can just install it and run it. Bottles doesn't care. You're giving it an executable to run through Wine. It doesn't care what the executable is. But saves Bottles from anything is that it's sandbox. Mm-hmm. If you get the flat pack, the official flat pack, if you get the unofficial AUR package, then guess what? You just killed the thing that Bottles was created for, sandboxing. So please, the whole summary of the episode today was the whole reason I wanted to come on this episode was I need to make Linux users aware of the fact that you are the one who ultimately decides how stable and how immune your system is.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot blame the developers. You cannot blame anyone. You can only blame yourself for not reading. If you don't want to read, yes, sometimes distros like where they push you not to read, not to do research like you want to, and still get such things thrusted upon you.
Mm-hmm.
Those are small issues that slip through the cracks, but they're not very often. If you're using a rolling distro like Arch and stuff, and you want to go bleeding edge, and you still refuse to read and do your diligent research, and please don't get surprised if your system crashes and dies, because yesterday. Someone installed a dependency that they shouldn't have. They kept on checking everything that PAMAX suggested.
Ah.
And their system was crashing. So I'm like, yeah. Those were suggestions. You shouldn't have selected everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still user error. It's not developer error. It's user error.
Mm-hmm.
So most issues on distros, on Linux, basically, are commonly user errors that users refuse to take responsibility for and throw the blame on the developers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to throw blame around. Shouldn't do that. I used to throw blame around. I learned from my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, after doing minimum amount of research, like reading the PKG build, like reading the output internal, because guess what? If you want to get to the bottom of a crash, for example, like don't get me started on Kden Live, but you run it from terminal, mm-hmm. you will get the exact problem that mm-hmm. you can go, and that's related to another one of your very interesting videos that mm-hmm. I highly recommend people to watch is report upstream. Not downstream. Don't report issue to AUR. Report it directly upstream to the project's GitHub. If you report it to AUR, guess what? The maintainer on AUR is not the same as the creator upstream.
It depends very much on the context of how the application is being used. I think with the AUR, yeah, it's probably fine to go upstream. If you're on something a bit older, then it depends on the project and what they're interested in supporting.
Yeah. Yeah, but most commonly you have to go, especially with Arch, mm-hmm. just go to the AUR. On the AUR, 99% of the time they have a link to upstream, mm-hmm. to the project upstream. Yeah. Some packages don't, for whatever reason, because they're completely custom and they're unrelated. But you click on that link, you go to GitHub, you create an account, you report the issue. The developer will like RepoCTL. I don't know if you ever heard of that package.
No.
RepoCTL, it's on the AUR. RepoCTL is for repo maintainers like myself. It allows you to push back, download the PKG build with a terminal command that I alias. It downloads the updated PKG build, builds the package, and pushes it to the repo.
Mm-hmm.
It's for repo maintainers. When Pac-Man got updated to 6.1, app stopped working because the new Pac-Man 6.1 introduced debug, new ways to sign the packages, and so on and so forth. I reported the issue upstream to the developer himself, who hasn't pushed an update in 4 years because it was feature complete. Mm-hmm. It was working. As soon as I reported the issue, not 45 minutes later, there was an update. If you do your job correctly, issues will be fixed, will be dealt with. Mm-hmm. So do that. If you're on bleeding edge distros or rolling distros and stuff like that, and you like that kind of stuff, read. That's the minimum you need to do. Read. And report issues the right way. Don't just say, that maintainer is bullshit and we don't need to trust them. And very commonly I see it on social media. They go complain about it on social media where they could have spent that valuable time reporting the issue upstream and wouldn't have been fixed by the time they started complaining.
That's what I do.
I do a bit of both, I'll make a video on it.
And you'll make a video, and I think it's because of your videos that the KDE developers were more aware of the
problem. The reason why I make a video on it is because I want people to be aware of the problem, right? Like,
yeah, awareness. You're spreading awareness.
Yeah. I think people are weird. They were like, why don't you just go and write code for it? Why don't you go and report issue? Like, again, a lot of times I do report issue. Sometimes I don't get reported because I forget to report it. But that's a whole other issue. That's an issue I need to fix myself. But I make the video oftentimes because there are issues out there that don't get the attention they deserve because most people just are not aware of the problem. And by making a video like that, it brings a lot of light to it. It gets people discussing the problem. Oftentimes, like, the issue isn't something that's actually serious anyway and just gets dealt with at some point in the future. Other times, it actually is a serious issue. And by bringing light to it, a lot of developers don't like this. I've said it before. If you make a lot of noise about something, oftentimes that will get it looked at a little quicker. That doesn't mean go and harass developers, but if you get a lot of people talking about a problem, it often gets fixed a lot quicker, especially when more people start to realize that it's a problem that affects them as well.
It's your way of reporting issues upstream.
I do report the issues upstream as well, but I know that developers from these projects watch the videos, so...
Like, yeah, and especially Vux3. Vux3 is as weird as he can be. Mm-hmm. He is one developer that, if I were to use Hyperland, which I will never use, I'm not a window manager person. I don't like key bindings. I don't like config files. I just like the drag and drop stuff, like on KDE Plasma. Just drag and drop, do your thing. But I'm a visual person, basically. But with Vux3, he does things very, very correctly. He sees your videos. You report the issue upstream, and you report issues to Hyperland more than you report to any other package because you're a Hyperland.
Well, the thing with Hyperland is it's easy to report issues. As someone new to Plasma, I've said it before, but like I'll say it as many times as I need to. The Bugzilla sucks. It is so hard to report issues for Plasma.
Yeah. Get it from a guy who has been using Plasma for 5 years. I don't report bugs because every time I do on their bug tracker, more often than not, it gets stale and then automatically gets closed. So I'm like, okay, I'll report issues to Nico directly. So the advantage us geeks have compared to regular users is we are in direct contact with some developers. Like, you are in direct contact with Vux3 on Discord. I am in direct contact with Nico on Telegram. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm in direct contact with one of the Manjaro maintainers. So in case of people mentioning an issue with Manjaro, it doesn't affect me since I don't use Manjaro. Well, I do on my HTPC, and it just celebrated its 1,600th day. So, because I only run Plex on it, that's the only app I have. But I do report issues directly to the developers themselves, going bypassing the whole bug tracker thing. When you do that, things get solved pretty quickly. Like yesterday, I mentioned the issue with OBS to Philip.
Mm.
I was like, yeah, we're on top of it. Mm. So, yeah, but this is a luxury we have that regular users don't.
Right, right.
We shouldn't even mention it. This is just, you gain that by being on social media, by being a distro maintainer, by being a developer, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The right way to report issues is to go upstream, click issues, new issue, report your problem. It can be very dumb.
Developers, unless it's Plasma, in which case you go new issue, you go find the section with your application, then you find in the section, then you find the application, then you set the rating, and then you find the tool in the subsection of the subsection of the subsection, and then you fill it out. But yes, click new issue.
I think they have a GitLab instance now.
They do. A lot of their tools are on GitLab, but they're like really spread out.
Yeah, they need to fix that.
Yeah,
they need to fix. Nico has been mentioning that they're working on the issue, but so far we haven't seen any fruit to that labor. Mm. But
it's a tough problem. That's the issue. There's a lot of things in Plasma. That's the issue.
That's another issue, yeah. But more commonly, if it's not Plasma, you just report issues upstream and you're good. Especially when it comes to packages, like on the AUR. Just click the GitHub link and there's one thing I don't like on the Arch repositories is they don't directly link you to the source and the PKG build. They don't have a link to the PKG build like they do on the AUR. You have to hunt for it.
Right, yeah. You got to go to the source of the package, and then you can find the PKG build in there.
Yeah, and sometimes the PKG build is buried inside a folder, which is inside another folder, which is inside another folder. You have to dig around for it.
With XZ, it's there on the first layer, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. Some of them are a bit of a mess.
And there's no commenting system on the Arch repositories because it's not meant for that. If you want to report an issue, that's why they have the unstable. You can join, and here's another thing I want to mention about Arch. Mm. Since a lot of people keep saying this, it's not true. It's a contribution based distro where people can contribute code packages. It's a collaborative effort. You can join it yourself if you are a developer. You can just request it from Antiz. Whatever he's known as on Arch.
Mm-hmm.
AUR, he's known by Antiz. I don't know if it's the same on Arch, but you can contact him. You can show him what you can do, and you can become part of the Arch community, and you can push packages there. They give you access to the unstable repositories and so on and so forth. You can push your package. They test it. Multiple people test it, and if it's okay, it gets pushed to extras. So help Arch be bigger. Help it get rid of all this fluff and cruft that is called, we have to rely on the AUR. There's a lot of packages that shouldn't be on the AUR, like Downgrade. I don't know why it's still on the AUR. It should be part of the core repository. It's on the AUR. It has been on the AUR since day one. I don't know why they haven't moved it.
Basecamp for downloading one or more packages to a version or cache. I did not know that was in the AUR. Huh.
Yeah, sudo dot, when they tell you, because here's the thing, Arch tell you if you're having an issue with a certain version of a package, downgrade it. How am I going to downgrade it if I don't install downgrade from the AUR? And yet you tell me not to trust the AUR.
Well, the manual downgrade method, that's how.
What?
You can manually downgrade it. You use the pacman command and pull it from your package cache.
Well, yeah, if you have it in the cache, because a lot of people clean their cache.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't have it in the cache, there's no way to grab it from online unless you have the downgrade package.
Mm-hmm.
So put it on the extra repositories. It's a working package and it's stable and it's feature complete. What else do you want? That's what I mean by help Arch get rid of all these problems. Contribute to Arch. And that's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a developer. I barely know how to write bash scripting. What is bash scripting? It's a culmination of commands that you collect with time. Instead of running each command separately, you can put them all in a single script, put an echo line that says what it's doing, describes what it's doing, and that's it. Save it, and that's a script for you. Of course, you can make it more advanced, like using whiptail and for end curses and stuff, but that's it comes with time. That's what I learned recently, that there's such a thing called whiptail. I can create a end curses where people can select a single package or multiple packages to install, instead of having to install one package, wait for it to be installed, then select another one, wait for it to be installed, and so on and so forth. You get the hang of it with time, but I'm a bash scripting beginner still, because right. I don't know how to use advanced commands, but I'm getting there slowly. So why not contribute all you learn upstream to Arch or to Gentoo or to Ubuntu, whatever. This is how Linux grows, by contributing what we have. And if you want to ask for financial support, we can ask, but don't thrust it in users' faces. This is how you lose them. You can donate. It's not necessary. Blah, blah, blah. That's it. That's the message I wanted to get across using this episode. We've been on for 2 hours, but this is the message. Linux is just like any other operating system. Its advantage is that it's open source. And with its open source nature, it brings with it certain responsibilities from you, the user, to know what you're installing, study things, and take responsibility for user errors. Because most of the errors stem from the fact that you didn't read the instructions correctly, or you installed it with a conflicting dependency, and so on and so forth. So, love Linux, be careful what you're doing on it, and be happy. Be happy. That's the thing. And don't go on social media spreading hate about something, because I see a lot of that. A lot of religious hate. I call religious hate is like, I use Hyperland. It's the best window manager in town. You shouldn't be using anything else. If you use anything else, you're a pleb. You're an idiot. You're a whatever. That kind of thing. And spread more and more on social media. They treat what they're using as the end-all be-all thing. Nobody has the same use case as you. That's why we're different. That's why we're human. This is part of humanity. If we're all the same, it would be a dull life. If you were a KDE user 24/7, and so was everyone else who was using Linux, then why do other desktop environments and window managers need to exist? So yeah, stop doing that. Stop doing that. There's a lot of things wrong with Linux. Same with Windows. Same with macOS. They all have their issues. But since we are talking Linux here, we need to talk about the thing we're using. And in this thing we're using, we need to stop that. Oh, you need to use this because this is the best. NixOS is the best because it's a whatever distro. Stop that. I'm like, that's one of the reasons I stopped Zero Linux. It was because, why don't you do this? Because this is the best. You're an idiot for not including Hyperland. You're ignoring you're artificially limiting your distro by not shipping Hyperland, by not including Wayland, and by not including, okay, I'm done with this. Let's create. I need to offer users more freedom. They can install whatever desktop environment, whatever window manager they like, then use my toolkit to get the necessary thing out of the way. That's it. So It pisses me off when I see people doing all this, spewing all this hate and condescending comments and words, because they think what they are using is it makes them reach the God tier, and they say that. Anyway.
Yeah. Well,
it was a great discussion.
I had fun. Yeah.
I don't know. It felt good. Getting off this off my shoulders, because I've been keeping it in for so long. I need to make a video on my own channel about this, but I'm too scared. I was like, might as well spew it out on Tech Over Tea.
Well,
nah,
it's just... Yeah, I guess that's as good a note to end it on as any.
Yeah, love Linux, don't hate it, and keep an open mind.
Yep. Well, let people know where they can find you and find your stuff.
You can find my toolkit on the website, and I need to mention one thing about the website. It's the current design is temporary. I'm messing around with HTML, but I'm working with someone on React, on a React version. It's coming slowly. But you can find anything about my toolkit on zerolinux.xyz. If you want to talk about me anything, talk to me about anything Linux, it's Mastodon, basically, Zero Linux. And if you want to talk to me about life and anything else, it's mastodon.social/@techzero.
Easy.
This is live. And on my YouTube channel, you can watch my videos. I put out 2 videos a week, Monday and Friday. So, yeah, that's where they can find me.
Awesome. Nothing else you want to mention?
Just one thing. Contributing to Linux doesn't mean contributing code. You don't have to be a developer. You can just be an issue reporter. You can just test if a package works. That's it. That's all Linux requires from us users.
Yeah, that's
regular
fair.
Users. Developers is a different story, but you, the regular users, just hit, if you encounter an issue, hit report issue. If you found a malicious code somewhere in the package, report it upstream. Click of a button!
Yeah, that's
fair. So easy as clicking a button.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. As for me, my main channel is Brody Robertson. I do Linux videos there 6-ish days a week. I don't know what will be out when this comes out, because, as always, I have a backlog of podcasts recorded. So this will be out sometime. Sometime in the future. The gaming channel, that is Brody on Games. I am probably still playing... Actually, probably done with God of War 3. And I'll probably be done with The World Ends With You. So, I don't know. I don't want to promise what I'll be playing. I'm thinking of doing, like, Sekiro or something like that. So, pop around and see what's there. And this channel, if you're listening to the audio version, you can find the video version on YouTube at Tech Over Tea. If you're watching the video, you can find the audio on any podcast platform. There is an RSS feed. Put it in your favorite app and you'll be good to go. Give it the final word. What do you want to say?
Repeat the same thing. Love Linux. Linux is a beautiful toy to play with. Have fun. Not a few bad words.
It's fair. See you guys later.